you have requirements. Whenever you go into a break room, you see those things on the wall. Well, if someone's working remote and they're not coming into the office, they're not seeing those things. So you have to be mindful to say, if this person is a full-time employee, I have to provide them with the same notices that I provide other employees. So you want to make sure that those postings are sent to them electronically. And here's the last one that's up on here is the restrictive covenants and their enforceability. I had someone send me one to look at the other day, and it was written under New York law. The employee was based in Texas. He serviced the Texas industry, but yet they had the non-compete that said that New York was the applicable law. It also said that the reasonable area was going to be 25 miles of New York City. So they had this non-compete that really didn't accomplish what they wanted it to accomplish, right? Because they thought, well, the guys in New York, we're going to make sure that he's not competing with us here. And I had to tell them, your non-compete does not accomplish what you want it to do. And in fact, if you want to do that, we're probably going to have to throw out this old one and start anew. And then you got to think about things like, well, do you have enough, are you paying them enough money to accomplish that? Is it ancillary to an otherwise enforceable agreement under Texas law? What I had to tell them was it's going to be a lot more difficult to pick up a non-compete midstream as opposed to when they first started their employment. It can be done, but it was difficult in that nature. And so these are kind of the local issues when you have people who are working remotely to think through and to really kind of start to implement into your policies. And really, that's our best practices, is to make sure when you're dealing with a work-from-home group that you have policies that address your particular business. You want to make sure that, as we said, those notices are posted electronically. You want to consider adding forum and choice of law provisions in your employment contracts, like those non-competes and non-solicitation agreements. And the last thing I'll tell you is you also want to update your employee handbook and policies to include addendums of various states to ensure current policies encompass remote work. So when you have these employees and you know that they're in these other states, think it through and say, do we need to provide a handbook that addresses these particular needs of these particular states? I would encourage you to do that. I would encourage you to get together with your legal counsel and your human resource professionals to make sure that you're adequately addressing those state rules. The second thing that we're going to talk about this afternoon is wage and hour concerns. This is probably, to me, the biggest concern that you should be concerned with in the remote work environment, because what happens is the person is working from home, they're doing all of this work, they're responding to emails, they're doing things that they are not getting compensated for. Everything may be peachy keen as long as I'm there, I'm working hard, but suddenly the relationship goes south, you have to terminate that person, the person wants to move on, and they're going to say, the reason why I'm leaving this company is because you had me do all of this work off the clock that I was not compensated for. And you say, well, I didn't know you were doing it. I didn't want you to do it. I, in fact, instructed you not to. And because you are not there to supervise them and monitor them, you have no way of really being able to tell them, you know, this work did not occur. And so now you have a he said, she said kind of situation where the employee says, I did all this work. You say, I didn't authorize any of this work. And now you're under a predicament where you suddenly may have to pay for this work that you cannot verify whether or not they did. And then what happens in these lawsuits is you suddenly start getting requests for productions about emails, and you see that the emails are in the evening time. They're at 8, 9, 10 o'clock, and they're compounded. And you say, oh, yeah, I guess I did know that employee was doing this work. And so what ends up happening is it can lend itself to collective action. So now you don't just have a case with that one employee, but anybody in a similar employment setting can then join that lawsuit, and you have a collective action under the FLSA, or in some states you can have a class action. So what you want to do here is to have policies in place and make sure that those employees understand that they're not to perform work off the clock, and that they're going to let you know if they are performing work as it goes on that they're not being compensated for. Under FLSA-type cases, one of the big issues is going to be liquidated damages. So what happens in those lawsuits is the damages are doubled, and the employees can potentially get attorney's fees. And so these cases on a collective action become quite attractive to plaintiff's attorneys.
All right.
Another thing that we see in these FLSA cases is travel time. There's a case that I cite there. It's a Texas case where the employees were working remote. They were repairmen. And what they were doing was they would roll out of bed every day, and they would log onto their computers, and they would print out tickets as to all the places they were going to go. And what they would then do is they would show up at the site, and they'd start performing work. Well, the company would only pay them for the work that they performed on site. They didn't pay them for any of the preparation work, all the work tickets, all the things they did on the computer. And so the employees made a claim to say, well, my work day really started at my home. And it really started the minute I fired up that computer. And all of that preliminary work I should be compensated for. And because it was integral to the work that was performed, that travel time to that first site should also be included, because now my work day started at home. I've got this travel time that's included. And so you want to think through those issues as to what how are workers beginning their day so that the work day begins, number one. And number two, should they be compensated for this travel time? I have so many employees that call me on a daily basis to say, well, you know, we don't pay them for that because we consider that commute time. And I'm going, well, what do they do? Do they load up a truck? Do they do other things that are involved in beginning that workday that could open them up to wage and hour claims? And so, again, as you go through this, if you have employees that report to you, you want to think through these issues and get it right, because the ramifications are, if you do not do that, you're going to have overtime claims. And that is something that, of course, we all want to avoid.